Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. For decades, I've been preaching about the importance of a regimen of basic supplements that everyone should consider part of their daily health routine. So I came up with an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. The very same supplements I take myself and prescribe for my patients. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com and check out my Intelligent Medicine Starter Kit. It's a short list of the basic supplements that I recommend as a starting point for those looking to take control of their health. They're the essential elements of a basic program that everyone could benefit from. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to DearHoffmanStore.com. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's part two of our weekly Q&A with Layla. And radio program at AOL.com is the place where you can send questions. We've got a batch of them, and we're pretty current. So if you send us a question, it is, and of course it's obligatory, if you send us a question, you're locked in. You've got to listen to the podcast to see if your question is answered. Usually is, barring some unforeseen circumstance, like if it's... there's some questions that are just too circuitous or really are tantamount to a medical consultation. Mm-hmm. We might reserve the right to not do a detailed response to a question that...
Other than say, come see us.
Well, yeah, that's a little self-serving and doesn't make good podcasts.
Yeah.
But you'll generally get your question answered within a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Radio program at AOL.com. Okay, what's our next question?
Okay, we've got an email from Daryl. Thank you for your weekly emails. He's talking about the Intelligent Medicine newsletter.
Oh, great.
Which you can also sign up for when you go to drhoffman.com. It's free. You get it about once a week, around Thursday, typically.
Yeah.
So, Daryl...
And I must say, you know, we've been really... I work hard on those, and I think we've really hit some important topics, and the statistics are... gratifying because people are opening it, reading it in unprecedented numbers.
And sending it along to their friends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Daryl is asking, what do you think about flu shots for the masses as most doctors recommend? I think it would be better for most people to maintain higher blood levels of vitamin D.
Well,
okay, Daryl.
somewhat facetiously, I'm all for flu shots for the masses just as long as I don't have to take it.
Because right,
In an ideal world, everyone should take the flu shot but me, and then we would eradicate the flu.
Yeah.
But that's the pitch. Mm-hmm. But actually, given the ineffectiveness of the flu vaccine, that would not be achieved. That's the ideal of every vaccine innovator, is that they will eradicate certain diseases. The flu has not really succumbed to that model. I mean, we've had some vaccine successes. I mean, the polio vaccine,
yes,
you can't deny that.
No.
And that was a terrible scourge when I was growing up. You know, you talk to some of these oldsters, you know, people who are now in their 90s, and they'll tell you that when they were moms and dads, they were really worried that their kids would come down with polio in the late 40s and early 50s.
I would want the polio vaccine, absolutely.
Yeah, and so people who are now about 70 were what are called polio pioneers. And then this is a disease that we've had tremendous success against. The flu vaccine is kind of hit or miss. And the concern is, you know, we have a new one now that supposedly addresses that. It's sort of an amped up flu vaccine for elders. It's like a senior flu vaccine. And it makes sense because older seniors don't have as robust an immune system. I guess anybody over 65 is now considered a senior.
Right.
And, you know, I would be eligible for that. Mm-hmm. But the concern is, I don't know what's going to cause more problems because it's sort of stronger and amped up. We don't know yet. It's sort of an experiment in progress that we're all guinea pigs for. Will it be more effective? Well, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, it's too early in the season to predict.
But the effectiveness rate in the past has been pretty abysmal, like 18% or something?
Yeah, anywhere from 18 to 30%. You know, and the more you need it, the less effective it is. In other words, if you're really a sick and debilitated person or very elderly, it's less likely to take.
Right. Compromised immune system. And
then there's the issue of the additives, aluminum, mercury, formaldehyde, and polysorbate. You know, and is what effect is that having on us, especially if the vaccine is not that effective? So, you know, in the past I've said I'm a flu shot agnostic. Mm-hmm. I'm not inalterably opposed, but I'm not a pro, which I guess is heretical in the medical profession because we're all supposed to be in lockstep and say, get your flu shot, get your flu, you know, it's like, and I'm a public figure and I'm now sowing doubt and dissension in the populace. And I'm supposed to say, do your duty because we're going to all take it and we're going to all, you know, hang together and eradicate the flu and prevent its spread and we'll save lives and blah, blah, blah. But I, you know, I'm still from Missouri on that. I'm, you know, it's the show me state. And it's like, I'm still waiting to be persuaded that it, A, it's safe and that B, it's totally, it's, you know, even more or less effective. Yeah. It's not even, you know, 80, 90% effective. That would be, you know,
that would be ideal.
Acceptable.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the CDC recommends you can reduce your chance of getting the flu by 50% with hand washing.
Okay.
Wash your hands.
Yeah.
When you arrive off the bus or the subway, you've been strap hanging or anything, when you're arriving to work, go wash your hands. This is a habit of mine.
I do that.
Ingrained as a kid. When I come home, I wash my hands. It's one of the first things I do.
Keep your hands away from your face.
Yes.
You know, don't poke your finger in your eye or poke your finger in your nose, especially, you know, if you've just been in a public conveyance, you know, like grabbing a pole in a subway or something like that.
Right.
You know, you know, to me, I find one of the measures that's helpful is walk to work. Don't take public transportation because
that would be a long walk for me.
Well, what, like 7 miles? What, are you a wuss?
No, actually, closer to five, I'd have to walk over the Queensboro Bridge.
Okay.
And,
right. Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to start off a lot earlier in the morning.
Yeah.
I won't bike because I think that's almost a death sentence.
Yeah, right. So it's like I'd rather, you know, take my chance of getting the flu than getting like, you know, run over.
Exactly.
So, yeah. But so apropos of vitamin D.
Vitamin D.
Look, vitamin D is not 100% either, but it's a benign intervention. It has so many other ancillary benefits. There is a reduction in flu incidence in people who are replete with vitamin D. So so many of my, and you've noticed this too with our patients, we've given vitamin D for any number of reasons to our patients. We've discovered they've had people who've had very low levels of vitamin D. And people say, yeah, you know, whatever, my autoimmune disease is much better, my lupus, my rheumatoid arthritis, my MS, blah, blah, blah.
My energy levels.
And oh, by the way, everybody around me is getting sick and I'm the only one who's well.
Yeah. Could be why the flu occurs most often in the winter months.
That's when
our vitamin D levels are lowest.
Yes, but you know, it's part of it is also that the flu seems to do well at sort of, you know, moderately cold temperatures, you know, not at 0 degrees, but more like 40, 50s. But also people close the windows and stay inside and then it's more communicable. You know, it's like, you know, kids playing outside on a playground, they're less likely to transmit the flu to each other. When it's cold, they tend to stay inside. And
Daycare centers
are, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, kindergarten class, that kind of a thing. Preschool. Daryl, thank you for your question.
All right. At this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors to share this vital message with you. Please listen up. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Healthy Aging, providing you with the unique energy support of Pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years with a 45-day money-back guarantee of nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Thanks for listening. And thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you all. And now back to our questions. What's next, Layla?
We've got a question from Melissa. I'm a 44-year-old female. Last year, my doctor discovered that I had endometrial hyperplasia and performed a partial hysterectomy. My ovaries are intact. When my labs came back, on my uterus, it had already developed into stage 1A endometrial cancer.
Cancer, okay.
Genetic testing revealed I have Lynch syndrome.
Oh, wow. Wow, this is a very interesting question. Yeah.
As a result, my oncologist now recommends I have my ovaries removed.
Yes.
Although Lynch syndrome does not cause a very increased risk of ovarian cancer, it does increase the chance somewhat. And according to my oncologist, my ovarian cancer is extremely hard to detect until it's too late. So better safe than sorry. So she recommends I have my ovaries removed within the next year. I have two questions, Dr.
Okay.
Hoffman.
So let me just weigh in. So this is a very interesting question. It's like, okay, most endometrial cancer is not related to Lynch syndrome, which is a genetic thing. And so when you come down with endometrial cancer, routinely they go, we'll test you for Lynch syndrome, but you probably don't have it. But, you know, we got to test anyway. You know, it's like, of course, then the test comes in, it's negative. Like, okay, you don't have Lynch syndrome. This is a case where the Lynch syndrome came up positive.
Yeah.
Now, Lynch syndrome is the actual term for it. And by the way, I'm not memorizing, I just looked it up. Mm-hmm. Hereditary non-polyposis colorectal cancer. So it's actually more related to colon cancer risk.
Okay.
It's an inherited disorder that increases the risk of many types of cancer, particularly cancers of the colon and rectum, but also related to risk for endometrial cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So endometrial cancer is mostly a hormonal disorder and risk factors include obesity.
Yeah.
Estrogen
dominance.
I wish I had a buck for every woman who's, you know, thin and slim and metabolically fine, still has endometrial cancer. Endometrial cancer can also be caused by estrogen, mm-hmm. especially when used without adequate progesterone to protect against the cancer. Certain breast cancer drugs, I believe tamoxifen, can somewhat increase the risk of endometrial cancer. That's the lowdown on Lynch syndrome, and it's not a typical kind of endometrial cancer. But the good news is 1A, very that's the lowest
stage,
non-invasive, easiest to treat with a hysterectomy. And I guess then they went ahead and took out the ovaries because the ovaries may be vulnerable. But this person needs more screening for colon cancer.
Well, her ovaries are intact.
Oh, okay.
So given that she has Lynch syndrome, do you agree with my oncologist's recommendation to remove my ovaries as soon as possible?
No, I'm not an expert in this field. I think that she probably has a higher risk for ovarian cancer, too.
The other thing that Melissa is concerned about, Dr. Hoffman, she says, I'm concerned with the risks of early onset medical menopause, including possible dementia. Remember, she's 44. I'm concerned about Alzheimer's, heart disease, other life-threatening issues. If I were only at risk for cosmetic risks like weight gains, low sex drive, I would be more comfortable with my oncologist push to have my ovaries out. But life potential side effects scare me very much. Is there anything I could do now while I still have my ovaries?
I think that this, again, is a question for the oncologist.
Yeah.
But I actually think this person is a candidate for hormone replacement therapy after, without a uterus and without ovaries. I'm not sure if Lynch syndrome is associated with higher risk of breast cancer. I mean, frankly, this is a question that's a little bit obscure.
Yeah.
Because if there's no higher risk of breast cancer, I'm looking at a study, 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Lynch syndrome mutations have a known risk of colorectal, ovarian, and and uterine cancer.
Yeah.
They actually have a modest 2 to 3-fold. But significantly increased risk for breast cancer. So then I guess hormone replacement therapy might be contraindicated in this case.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not astronomically high, but it's higher. So you wouldn't want to put more hormones back in.
Right.
Because it's some kind of genetic flaw that permits cancer to arise in different parts of the body.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So that's a 2018 study. And they asked that question because, you know, I guess it came up you know, women who've had a hysterectomy, should they get, for Lynch syndrome, should they get hormone replacement therapy for their well-being?
Right.
And the answer is, it could be risky in this case.
Okay. Not an easy answer, Melissa. But wow, thank you for this.
Is that sort of where she's going? She's considering hormone replacement therapy?
No. She wants to avoid having her ovaries removed. And she's wondering.
I'm thinking that because of the higher risk that, you know, you can't walk away from that. I mean, it's a personal choice. And, you know, it's not inevitable that you'll get ovarian cancer, not like a 90% thing, like an Angelina Jolie kind of situation.
Yes.
But there's a higher risk, and, you know, you have to kind of weigh that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to take a chance and, you know, have the benefits of not having your ovaries removed?
Yeah. Best of luck to you, Melissa, whatever your decision. Okay. Let's see here.
That's a very, very interesting question.
Yeah. We have an email from Rita, who, after reading the Intelligent Medicine newsletter, particularly your article, The Clinical Focus on Nicotinamide Riboside, writes, I have experienced...
You know, when I saw something very interesting is I wrote that article and I looked at full script, you know, because I have a way of just logging in and looking at the orders. And it's like... Nicotinamide riboside. The product is called True Niagen. Now available on FullScript. And thus the order's like boom, 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 just started coming in.
It's very beneficial.
I almost feel like broadcasting a blast email to all our patients and listeners and just saying, just take it.
Rita writes, I've experienced lower blood pressure with just 250 milligrams. Of nicotinamide riboside daily. Is this common?
I don't think it's common, but it's interesting. You know, maybe that would be beneficial for a lot of people to get their blood pressure lowered. Did she mention that she's feeling woozy, lightheaded, any problems?
Nope. She doesn't say anything else about it.
What is it? What's her blood pressure, did she say?
She doesn't say.
Okay.
She's experienced lower blood pressure.
That's good.
Yeah.
I mean, that might be
good
in her
thing.
Case. Yeah.
That's a good thing.
I mean, it's not one of the known attributes of nicotinamide riboside.
No, it doesn't have a vasodilating effect.
I don't know. Anything that works on the energetics of the mitochondria might actually facilitate nitric oxide action on the cells.
Maybe it might. Yes.
Yeah.
Even by default that way.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So Rita, take nicotinamide riboside. It's just good for so many things.
Mm-hmm.
Including cancer prevention, which everybody's concerned
about. It won't bring you your slippers and your morning paper.
We still have to rely on man's best friend,
you know.
Rita, thank you for your question. Okay, we've got an email from Elaine. I've listened to your show for some time. The information is invaluable. Your show's regarding...
Let's get it clear.
Yeah.
It isn't valuable or it's invaluable?
It's invaluable.
Oh, good. Okay, that's good.
Yeah. Your shows regarding the CBD oil are very interesting. I would sure like to try, as I have anxiety and I would prefer taking CBD rather than adding another medication.
Great.
However, I'm currently taking Plavix.
Mm-hmm.
I've Googled it. I'm seeing mixed information. Do you know if there's a concern with CBD and prescription meds,
but there's specifically there's a lot of
Plavix.
These blood thinners where they just say, well, don't take any supplements because you never know. It could make you bleed to death.
And you never know is not a great answer.
No, exactly. Exactly.
You know, find out.
It's like what it does is it denies people the benefits of a lot of things. Like,
so
it's like, oh, don't take any supplements because we don't know. But, you know, and I'm not being cavalier about it. I mean, I have no reason to think that CBD is a potent blood thinner.
Yeah.
And so it really is unlikely to have an effect. Now, the only way that it might have an effect, and I'm going to leave this possibility open, is if it works on the cytochrome P450 system and if Plavix is implicated in that. Sometimes certain medications can influence the bioavailability of drugs.
Yeah.
But since, you know, Plavix is one of those sort of one-size-fits-all medications, it's not really calibrated so much to your weight or your blood thickness. Unlike Coumadin, you know, where Coumadin is, well, you know, some people are taking, you know, 2 milligrams and other people are taking, you know, 7 or 8 or, you know. And you have to play around to get the blood thinning effect. It's pretty much, you take your Plavix and, you know, it's a couple of dosages available and I don't think it's big. There's actually, There's even a racial disparity in people's responses to Plavix. I think African Americans are less responsive to
Plavix. Really?
Yeah.
Really? That's interesting.
Well, you know, I would say the default answer is it should be fine.
It should be fine, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Elaine.
Incidentally, yeah. This is the digression, and you know, I'm sorry if we don't get the next question, but big study in this, you know, right next to that study that I talked about at the top of this show, in the New England Journal of Medicine,
yes,
about the lack of efficacy of fish oil supposedly in diabetes, there was a big article about healthy seniors taking aspirin.
Uh huh.
And so, very interesting about that is, so you know, about a month ago or so, there was one on healthy individuals, even with moderate cardiovascular risk. Maybe they're a little overweight, maybe their cholesterol's a little high, but they mm-hmm. haven't had heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they haven't had a stent or bypass or angina or any kind of, they just are at risk. You know, you figure like, hey, I'm a 55-year-old guy and my cholesterol's a little high and who knows, you know, my father died of a heart attack at 50. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take some aspirin. You know, just like they say in the commercials, you know, protect yourself, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Well, no benefit. No benefit. And in fact, a net increase in risk of bleeding episodes.
Bleeding.
So it was not, yeah. Because
yeah.
a very small percentage of people bleed, and that over tens of millions of people taking it could be thousands of episodes of bleeding.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's take a different proposition. Maybe it doesn't protect so much against cardiovascular disease, but there's some studies that show that aspirin even has some anti-cancer effects.
Yes.
Anti-colon cancer.
Because it's an anti-inflammatory.
Anti-inflammatory. Or maybe yeah. it's an anti-Alzheimer's, you know, something, you know, it's anti-inflammatory. So you're 75 years old, take an aspirin because maybe it's not going to protect your heart, but at least it might protect you from cancer. They did that study in the New England Journal of Medicine. And what they found was there was an increased risk of dying in those taking the aspirin. And it didn't come so much from bleeding, although there was...
I was going to ask if was it bleeding.
There was an increased risk of... Ready for this?
Hmm.
Cancer.
Oh.
So instead of preventing cancer in this study, slightly increased the risk of cancer.
Was it a particular cancer or just cancer overall?
I think cancer.
Cancer.
Cancer. And they said, well, they don't understand this, but, you know, that's not encouraging about the use of aspirin as a preventive for either number one, heart disease, number two, cancer. So, and then you would say, well, maybe there's some stroke prevention, but there was no, clear-cut benefit. I mean, now there are some people who must take aspirin for stroke prevention.
Yes.
So if you've had, you know, mini strokes or something, maybe you need aspirin or another blood thinner, because you really have demonstrated that you have risk.
Yeah.
But for the healthy older population. And I would say, I'm in that cohort now. I'm 66, just turned 66.
You won't be taking an aspirin.
I ain't going to be taking any aspirin, but I will take fish oil.
Yeah. Another side effect of regular aspirin intake is tinnitus.
Yeah.
That's another thing to look out for.
And you don't die from it, but you wish you would.
Especially if you've got the roar of a vacuum cleaner in your ears or if it develops that way.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
The other thing is so many patients are told by their doctors to, when should I take my aspirin, doctor? Take it at night. This is not great advice because you must take your aspirin on a full stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're risking that ulcer,
yes. And then you're also horizontal and it could stay in your esophagus,
yes,
and it could cause bleeding
erosion
in the stomach. You know, yeah.
No.
You
don't want any of that.
Yeah.
So.
There you go. All right. Well, hey, that's all the time that we have for today's Q&A with Layla. So thank you very much. And a reminder, you can get lots more content. Well, yeah, if you already listen to this, you're probably aware of the content because this is a podcast. But check out all our podcasts at drhoffman.com. Subscribe to our newsletter if you haven't yet already. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter because we post fun stuff there. And make sure you listen to our weekly radio program. And send your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com or click on our homepage at drhoffman.com and you can record a question. We use those for our weekly radio broadcast. That's all she wrote. Thanks, Layla.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, There's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.